32 years later, DNA under one of his victim's fingernails led to a break in the violent cold case of two best friends. And while his name was on the minds of law enforcement, they thought to see if he could have anything to do with a missing 9-year-old. And then there are the cases he's already done or is doing time for. This is the story of David Misch, the Bay Area serial killer whose solved crimes just keep stacking up. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. This case began with just a little blurb in the newspaper, two Fremont women slain. No one could have known at the time what a twisted thing it would end up being and how many years it would take to solve. On February 2, 1986, the bodies of two young women were found by a motorcyclist along the shoulder of Mill Creek Road in San Francisco's East Bay, a little after midnight. One had been shot and the other slashed. They were naked, and the police were calling it brutal and violent. 18-year-old Michelle Xavier and 20-year-old Jennifer Ann Dewey had gone to a birthday dinner for Michelle's grandfather at around 8 p.m., and then stopped at a 7-Eleven at about 10 p.m. when they drove by and saw their boyfriends there. The women were friends from freshman year back at their small all-girls high school, where they were both in the spirit club and Michelle was a cheerleader. They worked at different department stores and would call each other from work to catch up. They saw each other every day, and people called them perfect best of friends. So close, they would go to each other's family gatherings and make their boyfriends go on double dates with them. They were both dating older men, but apparently Jennifer's boyfriend, Matt, was much older, 25 years old, oh my. The last thing she said to him was, "I'll just see you tomorrow," as she gave him a kiss. He said they were the nicest girls in the world. Michelle and Jennifer said they were off to rent a movie, and the boys assumed they would go straight home from there. Michelle's parents would later think she was at Jennifer's house, and Jennifer's parents would think she was at Michelle's house. Michelle's 1984 Pontiac Sunbird convertible was eventually found at a shopping center 5 miles from their bodies, but neither woman had any sort of ID or purse or anything at the scene, just a lone pink coat nearby. The crime scene was beside a dark, secluded part of the road, and they had to have met someone quickly to turn up dead just a couple of hours later. A man said he saw Michelle's car parked there at the shopping center between 11:15 and 11:30 p.m., and although the sporty vehicle caught his eye, he didn't recall seeing the women nor anything being weird. The police said it was potentially a robbery gone wrong, but they just weren't sure. There wasn't much to go on. Almost 1,000 people came to Michelle's and Jennifer's memorial service, and after 7 weeks, a reward fund had grown to almost $20,000. Police eventually capped the reward at $35,000 just in case someone had information but was waiting for the fund to get higher. Still, no one came forward. 32 years went by. But then in March 2018, a suspect was arrested. They didn't have to look hard for 57-year-old David Emery Misch. He was already in prison, serving 18 years for another crime. As is so often the case, a fresh set of eyes had changed everything in the deaths of Michelle and Jennifer. In 2016, the Fremont PD created a new position to look at old cold cases, and the detective assigned to the role made this case his top priority. Luckily, there was DNA under Jennifer's fingernail clippings, and they finally had the technology to link it to Misch. Apparently, Jennifer had fought with him before he shot her. And what's really sad to me, Michelle had written some letters and numbers on her hand with a pen that turned out to be partially Misch's license plate. One source said they were within a digit or two, but I'm not sure if that means she was missing a digit or two or if she got the number slightly wrong. Either way, both of these women left clues about their killer. It turns out that he lived in the Fremont area in the 80s and was a burglar and involved in drugs. The cold case detective met with the DA's office to go over the evidence in August 2017 and then continued to gather more in the way of interviews with witnesses, family members, and the main suspect, Misch, until they finally had enough to arrest him.
A break in a cold case murder in Fremont. Two young women were killed and then left along a road in the 1980s. KPIX5's Len Ramirez says police were not sure who did it until now.
Yeah, we've been working this case constantly.
It was one of Fremont's most shocking murders in a long-lasting cold case, the double homicide of two young women unsolved for 32 years until now.
It just feels so good to be able to sit there and talk to the family and tell them we have some kind of resolution for you guys.
Mish went to trial in October 2024, and jurors reportedly gasped as they were shown images of the women's clothes strung up on a barbed wire fence at the crime scene. Police believe Jennifer and Michelle stopped at the video rental store at the shopping center and then must have run into Mish on his motorcycle. He probably used his gun to coerce them to drive out to the secluded area with a sexual motive and then drove Michelle's car back later. He, of course, said he had never even heard of the road the women were found on. 6 weeks into the trial, Mish took the stand and said he could totally explain how his DNA got under Jennifer's fingernails. See, it was because he was a dealer, and the women were trying to buy $250 of powder from him. He made them meet him at the shopping center for such a big score. He said Jennifer and he shared a cigarette during the deal. You hold a cigarette with your fingers, fingernails are attached to fingers, and there you have it. The thing is, back when he was being interviewed by police, Mish said he saw the women being abducted while he was pumping gas and had tried to save them. He said he was a protector of all the girls, and Jennifer must have accidentally scratched him in the process of him being an absolute hero. But the police were like, how interesting that you knew the women were last seen at the shopping center. So days later, Mish unsuccessfully tried to end his life in his cell, leaving a note to his brother that said, they'd never let me out now. Now he was changing his story on the stand to this drug deal scenario, but I can't imagine how he thought that would help him. So the now 63-year-old Mish was convicted on two counts of first-degree murder. He'll be sentenced to 50 years to life in January 2024, although he's already serving a life sentence. Because as sad as this case is, Michelle and Jennifer aren't the only people that he's killed or violated, not by a long shot. In 1977, when he was only 16 years old, Mish broke into a neighbor's home and held their cleaner at knife point while he assaulted her and nearly strangled her to death. He was convicted and went to prison, but got out on parole after 2 years. So then he broke into another neighbor's house and threatened her and her kids with a knife while wearing only a jacket. In 1982, he saw a Swiss foreign exchange student picking flowers and said she had an arrogant attitude. So he knocked her out with the apparent intention to assault her, but people living nearby heard what was going on and came out to stop him. He served 4 years for that. In 1988, 5 days after Mish got out on parole again, 9-year-old Michaela Garrick went missing in Hayward, California. The story goes that a new family moved in across the street that appeared to have a little girl her age, so she knocked on the door and asked if they could be friends. They became such good friends that on November 19th, they decided to be twins for the day. They dressed alike and headed down the block on their scooters to pick up snacks at the Rainbow Market. They bought Mountain Dew, Laffy Taffy, and beef jerky with their $5 and then went back outside to scoot home. Only one of their scooters wasn't where they left it, leaning against a wall. It had been moved to the parking lot around the back of the store, beside the driver's side door of a car. And as Michaela went to retrieve it, a man dragged her into his old gold or tan sedan. She screamed, and her friend turned in time to look into the kidnapper's eyes. Michaela was never found, and Mish was arrested for something else a few days later, so authorities believe he probably killed her soon after taking her. Years later, a thumbprint and palm print that were found on Michaela's scooter were determined to be his, and investigators say the match was so evident that they could literally see it through eyesight. So if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see the composite sketch of the suspect who took Michaela and a photo of what Mish looked like at the time. Prosecutors believe that Mish may have actually been visiting the grave of his son when he spotted the girls and took Michaela. His baby had died at only 3 months back in 1988, although I'm not sure why. But the cemetery was across the street from the market where the girls went to buy snacks, and a witness saw a dirty Oldsmobile without its hubcaps driving through the gravestones that day. It matched the description Michaela's friend gave of the kidnapper's car. But none of this came together until 2018, when Mish's name was in the minds of the authorities after he was charged with Michelle's and Jennifer's deaths. They started looking into him as a possible suspect. He was finally charged for this murder in 2020 and is still awaiting trial. There's some hope that he may be able to tell them where Michaela's body is. In 1989, Mish beat and stabbed 36-year-old Margaret Ball inside her house. He had done odd jobs for the woman in the past, and he said they were having consensual relations when she decided she wanted to stop, and he slapped her. She supposedly threatened him with a knife in response to the slap, so he stabbed her before she could stab him. Her family says she had a boyfriend. This wasn't the first time Mish had threatened her, and she was actually terrified of him. Mish later told his dad that he was high that day and went to rob her, and his dad thankfully testified against him. This is what he was serving his life sentence for when he was arrested for the murders of Michelle and Jennifer. Mish says his father abused him as a child and his mother never stopped the abuse. So, you see, he had a right to kill a bunch of people. It's just wild to think how many times this guy was in prison and how many lives could have been saved if he'd just been kept there or was somehow rehabilitated. I'm just thankful that advances in forensics keep catching up with these guys now. One reporter described Mish's murders as part of a time capsule, unpacked years later and miraculously figured out. But one thing that struck me is how Michaela's mom doesn't exactly feel relief. Let me read you a statement that she wrote that's both beautiful and sad. She said, "In the last year, I had to come to a place of acceptance that Michaela was probably no longer alive. But somehow that acceptance was far more wrapped up in the idea of Michaela sitting on a fluffy, thin cloud, walking on streets of gold, dancing on grassy hills, soaring among the stars. What I did not envision was my daughter as a dead child. It was only when I heard this news that this vision of reality appeared, and I have honestly not figured out what to do with it. A chill set in which had nothing to do with the snow outside my home in southwest Iowa. I feel as though I am looking for Michaela, but now I don't know where. I honestly feel lost in the dark. Over the years, I have often wondered whether I really wanted to know the truth about what happened to Michaela. I wondered if I'd be able to take it. It's never struck me before how having the murder of your child solved could almost be worse than not knowing." Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.